Hi, friends, and welcome to the By Faith podcast. My name is Christine Hoover, and I'm so glad you're here. This season on By Faith, my 10th season, we are talking about the ins and outs of vocational ministry. I hope you've enjoyed these conversations so far because it has truly been my joy to get to talk to my guests and get to share their insights and stories with you. I am especially excited about today's episode because my guest is Suzanne Rodriguez, and Suzanne and I talk about two topics that rarely get addressed in resources for pastors' wives: bivocational ministry and closing a church plant. Suzanne and her husband planted a church in New Jersey around 2014, reaching an immigrant population in their neighborhood. Just before COVID hit, they made the difficult decision to close their church. In this conversation, I talk with Suzanne about the tensions for her and her husband as he pastored bivocationally and what she learned about how to support and help and sometimes challenge her husband during that time. She also gives voice to the church planting wife's experience, like knowing the fine line of when to press for what you need from your husband and when to wait, entrusting yourself to the Lord. In the end, Suzanne and I talk about the disappointment she felt after closing their church and about what success is for those in vocational ministry, a very important question. I loved this conversation, and I am so glad to get to introduce you to Suzanne Rodriguez. I'm really excited about this episode. I have Suzanne Rodriguez joining me from New Jersey. Welcome, Suzanne.
Thank you so much. Quite a privilege for me.
Are you originally from New Jersey?
I am not. I am a native New Yorker, actually.
Okay. Yes. Is that like a big thing if you're a New Yorker? You're like, I'm not a New Jersey.
So it's not for me anymore. I mean, I think when we first moved to New Jersey, it was a big thing. And I think that everyone knew we were not native New Jerseyans. But now I often feel awkward sometimes saying that I'm a native New Yorker because we've lived in New Jersey now for about 18 years now. So I don't know that the natives in New York would actually agree with me saying I'm a still native New Yorker. But yes, I was born and raised in New York.
But you don't, did you grow up in the city?
I did, actually, on the Lower East Side of Manhattan.
Because when you said Manhattan, I heard it, but I don't have an accent.
No, I do not necessarily have an accent, but you do hear it when I say Manhattan. My boss says that you hear it when I say that. So yes. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm so excited about this, talking to you, because you represent a lot of women who we don't get to hear their stories. Bivocational, your husband was bivocational. You were working while church planting, and we're going to get to this, but you guys decided to close your church plant.
Yes.
Which a lot of people experience those things, but we don't get to hear their stories. So I just want to hear your story today. And I want my listeners to hear your story. And I want to hear from you what you've learned along the way. So can you just start at the beginning? Tell us how you guys were called into ministry, what kind of ministry you were doing, that kind of thing.
Absolutely. I want to say it was probably 2012 or so when my husband actually started to express a desire for church planting. We were already serving as youth pastors at a church, actually, where we ultimately ended up planting, which was in Union City. We were serving at a sister church there as youth pastors. And that was quite an experience, getting to know the community, the people around there. Definitely a great introduction of what was to come. But my husband started to explore the idea of church planting a little bit further, and he had a great opportunity to go ahead and learn about church planting at an incubator program at a church in New York City, Redeemer, and he did that for about a year. I have to be transparent here and say that the idea of church planting was not appealing to me. It was not. I mean, no. And if he were here in the room, he would say that I just flat out said no, which I did. And that was hard. We had just found a rhythm for our lives at the time. I felt like I had just switched jobs. I was working in New York City, and I had just gotten a great opportunity to work for the New Jersey courts. I just started that job. Our son was just starting preschool. It felt like not perfect, but it felt like a great, great rhythm that we had going. And I knew that church planting was just going to be a completely different routine, different rhythm.
Yes.
And I just wasn't sure that I was ready to take on that kind of commitment.
Yeah.
And so I initially said no. And I think I said no, and I stuck to no for about a good 6 to 9 months. but clearly this was something that my husband, wasn't just my husband asking me to do, right? This was clearly something God was asking me to do. And so I definitely struggled and wrestled with God with that for those 6 to 9 months. And ultimately I said, okay, God, this will be the biggest adventure.
Yeah. What was the turning point? What was the turning point for you?
Well, he was still in this program in New York City. And so he would come home from these classes and he was just a different person. He really just was. There was a passion about him. And clearly this was something God had given him to do. And I could not deny that. I could not deny that. Not just for our marriage, but just for my own walk with God, right? I couldn't deny that. So that was definitely the turning point for me. It was hard. I'm not going to sit here and say it was easy. It was not. It was still hard. But I knew that I could trust God. I didn't know what the outcome would be, but I knew I could trust God.
What, help us remember what your husband was doing at the time. Was he working and doing youth ministry?
Yes, he was. He was working full time. He works in IT. So he was doing that. And he was full-time ministering at that church in Union City. So yes, our lives were pretty busy. And I was actually also taking some college courses at the time. So we were very busy people. Yeah.
You were living in New Jersey, working in Manhattan. You had a preschooler, only just one preschooler?
Yeah, just one at the time. Yes.
Okay. He's working two full-time jobs.
Yes.
And he's doing the incubator program in New York City.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, that stresses me out just thinking about it. No wonder you were kind of like, I don't know. Although to me, church planning seems a little bit maybe simpler than that, but maybe not. I don't know.
I think it was actually preparation for that because it was just as fast paced and we were always busy, always.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about the beginning of church planting. So he stopped doing the youth ministry.
Yes.
But he's still doing his job full time.
Yes.
And you guys are planting in the neighborhood where you were living?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. No, actually not where we were living. When my husband actually started working with the community, it was actually through an ESL program that was hosted in West New York. From there, he worked with that organization for a good 6 to 9 months. And then we moved into the Union City area where he opened up his own ESL program. And that's where we started to get to know the community. We officially moved in probably 2 years after that, actually. We commuted. And that was that. I don't recommend that either. But it was what we did at the time. Mm-hmm. We did not have a space or anything like that when we started. So it was just easier for my husband to continue with the ESL classes, continue to get to know the community, and me just kind of come alongside him on the weekends, which is what we did for the first couple of years.
Where were you meeting for church then?
So we had partnered with a few places, but one of the long-term spaces we had was at another local church. They wanted to partner with my husband in terms of helping out the community, and they had a very small little space in the back, and that's where we met for quite some time. But it was primarily just with that ESL community at first. When we actually launched, we launched actually in a small room that was attached to like a facility for senior citizens. That's actually where we launched our services.
Okay. Okay. Let's put a little, you know, bookmark, and I want to continue in your story, but I want to take some time to talk about life as a bivocational pastor and pastor's wife who is working outside the home. Can you tell us what that was like when let's talk about it from the point of view of church planting. So you're church planting and you're both working full-time outside the home. What are some of the tensions that your husband faced in that time or challenges that he faced?
All about time, Christine, all about time. That was the biggest tension. And it was also the biggest challenge, right? We all know that we're only allotted a certain number of hours in a day. And so I think that the biggest tension was, all right, so how do I maximize this time? Mm-hmm. And not only how do I maximize this time, this is me watching him, right? How does he maximize that time? And then how does he give quality time to everything in that day?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was definitely the biggest tension and biggest challenge. There was never enough time. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like you wake up every day and you know that there's never enough time. You're not going to necessarily get to everything that you set out to do in that day. And I think you wake up with that, and that's hard. I think that's like your first challenge. And then I think the next one is, all right, well, then how do I maximize? How do I work out my day? So that was definitely what I watched him face. Mm-hmm.
So as his wife, how did you help him in that, support him in that, challenge him in that?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he would say I definitely challenged him in that. that wasn't automatic. That was trial and error. I didn't know how to do it initially. I think because I too kind of came in with the attitude of, well, we only have a certain amount of hours in the day. Mm-hmm. And because we all had already lived pretty fast paced, packed lives, I think that I went into it thinking, well, we can just do it. We can do it. We've been doing it, right? We did it before, different jobs, perhaps a different time frame, but we did it before. I don't think that was very helpful. I think that actually added a layer of pressure onto him saying, well, you can do it because we did it before. But we didn't do it before, right? We hadn't church planted.
That's right.
Before.
So different creature.
Exactly. So I think that initially I wasn't very helpful. I think I had to take a step back. And I even recall that I would love to say that this was like 6 months in, but it wasn't. I think it was probably a year into church planting that I just took a step back and said, this is not helping. Like, this is not working for you. This is certainly not working for me. And so I learned to be a really good listener. And I think that encouraged him, because I think one of the things I learned was there were so many demands happening, right? He was hearing so many voices. There were so many people speaking into his life, placing different demands and expectations on him. He didn't need an additional voice challenging him. And he certainly didn't need an additional voice adding any additional expectations. And that isn't to say that I couldn't voice my opinion or voice my expectations, but it was all a matter of how and when I did it, right? I think I learned that I needed to listen to where he was first and what expectations he was attempting to manage at that time, what adjustments he was feeling like he needed to make, versus me charging in, which I did in the beginning, charging in saying, we need to do this, we need to do that. Did you do this? Did you do that? That certainly wasn't a way to go. So I think what was most encouraging was just me sitting there with him and listening to him initially. And then after that, figuring out how I could help him prioritize. Mm-hmm. And what things could I take off his plate too? Like, what things did he not necessarily need to handle at that moment that could wait, so that he could meet another expectation or another demand? I think that was very helpful to him.
That's good. What about your role? How did you view your role? Because you are working full time, you have a child.
So when we launched our church that summer, I was actually pregnant with our second child.
Okay.
So it was a very chaotic time. And our second child actually ended up coming early. So in the beginning, yes, very exciting time. In the beginning, I think that I was 110% committed to just being by the side and being at every single event and definitely just doing whatever I could. So if that was packing, unpacking, if that was helping with setup, if that was just being operational, then that's what I was doing at the time. But once our daughter came along, I definitely had to take a back seat. Mm-hmm. I just definitely kind of stood on the sidelines for a while. That took some time.
Yeah.
And that's just in the beginning. And then I think after that, it depends on the season that you're in, right? Church planting has so many different seasons to it. I think for the first year and a half, we were still living in Woodbridge versus living in Union City. So our time in the community was very limited. And so I think that helped me figure out what role I could play from a distance. I couldn't necessarily accompany him to everything. And so that was helpful. It also gave me time with our daughter, which was great. Mm-hmm. But then when we moved to Union City, I did have to consider, okay, so what things can I attend and what things can't I? Mm-hmm. And how could I do this, but not necessarily be there? It was very challenging trying to figure out what role to play. I think that the easiest one was to just sit there and say, I'll do children's church. That way I can be with the baby and I can actually help that. And that worked for a little while until it didn't work anymore. So I think it was constantly changing hats too, depending on what was needed at the time.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You mentioned earlier the neighborhood, the ESL. Were you trying to reach a certain group of people?
Absolutely. So in Union City, it is a predominantly immigrant city.
Okay.
It's 99% immigrant city. And we were definitely trying to reach that generation. Well, you have two generations there. You have usually a younger generation that is born actually in Union City. And then you have that older generation that has immigrated into New Jersey, into the States. And so we were definitely trying to reach that gap. Our services were bilingual. Okay. And so we were definitely trying to get into a younger generation and kind of connect those two generations together to kind of make a family place where everybody could come along. And
that seems to be, in my mind, an added challenge that you're trying to reach a group of people that have very different experiences and needs.
Absolutely. And different schedules too.
Mm.
We definitely walked into Union City with the idea that, oh, we could do events on XYZ days and we would probably get XYZ turnout. That quickly turned us upside down. That was not the case. In Union City, you are facing a community that works 6 to 7 days a week. There aren't days off. And they are working 12 to 18 hour days.
Mm.
Yes.
Wow. So
yes. Very different. So and the nice part about that was that we were able to get to know that as we hosted the ESL classes.
Uh-huh.
We got to know their rhythm and their routines. So that was very helpful in terms of figuring out, okay, well, then a 9 o'clock event on Saturday is not going to work.
No. Yeah. Well, I'm wondering what kind of tensions and challenges you were facing. We talked about your husband, what he faced. I would imagine time is one, but were there other things that you were facing in this kind of life that you're building and living?
Absolutely. I mean, I think number one, it was definitely how do I come alongside him and how do I serve him and our church well, right? But I think it was also how do I serve my family well as we do all of this? That was definitely one of the struggles I faced. And that, I think I faced that throughout the church plant because it's seasonal, right? There were different challenges for different times. So I think when our children were younger, it was how do I transition these children into a brand new city for them, especially our son who was going into middle school at the time and definitely was used to a different environment. So it was, mm-hmm. how do I acclimate him? And then it was, all right, so how many hats am I wearing this Sunday? And do I choose to wear, right? Do I choose to wear that many hats? Do I have a choice this Sunday?
Right.
Right. As a church plant grows, that changes and you get to wear less and less hats. So that's always helpful. But getting there, that process of getting there, that's challenging. And then figuring out, okay, well, I no longer have to wear that hat. Okay, so what do I do next? Constant reinventing of yourself, that's so right. to speak.
That's yeah. right. Well, I know that there are church planting wives out there listening to you and they're thinking, okay, tell me everything you know. Like, I'm in that spot. So I'm wondering if you have some primary lessons that you learned in those years that you could share with them?
The first thing that comes to mind would be try to remain your authentic self. I think that when you're thrown into church planting and the throes of the mess that it can be, there can kind of come this urge to become someone else to fit the need. And I know that we do have to wear different hats, but I don't think that it needs to change who we are entirely. So I think the first thing I want to say is I struggled with just being authentic and it affects you long term. I didn't know that when I wasn't being my real self, but a couple of years down the road, you're sitting there just like, wait, I used to like to do this. I do like to do this.
Yeah.
When did that change? So I think the first thing I want to say is try to be as authentic as you possibly can. The second thing would be, have the repeated conversations with your spouse. What are our priorities right now in this season? And how do we work on keeping them sacred? That was really helpful to my husband and myself. And I'm not saying sit down and have that conversation weekly. We did that probably every 6 to 8 weeks.
Uh-huh.
And we did that because it was helpful. It kept our household healthy. It helped keep our time sacred. And it gave me hope. It gave me hope that this would not be a permanent season of our lives, that there was more down the road, and that right now these were the priorities that were going to keep our household relatively healthy and me sane.
Yes. I'm wondering, you mentioned earlier not wanting to make demands of your husband when he already is experiencing so many demands. But I also think, and I totally understand what you're saying, but what I saw in my experience in church planting, what I experienced with my husband, is that that became a norm for me to not express, hey, I need something. I'm drowning here. And you just described that you are keeping your family afloat. You're working. You're trying to help your husband. How can we maintain a healthy balance of not demanding too much of our husbands and kind of, I know what you're expressing. You're kind of saying like, I was so aggressive. Like, you got to do this. You got to do that. But how do we also voice what we need? Because we are real people and we are married, right? And we can sometimes get lost in all of the church plant.
Oh, absolutely.
How did you do that?
Well, I have to tell you, I didn't do it well in the very beginning, which is why I said that I did have to learn not to be as aggressive and not charge in with all of my demands. I think what I learned and what worked for my husband and I was to set aside time for me to talk about how I was feeling. The same way we set aside time to talk about what our priorities were and how, what was working, what wasn't working. It was the same way that he would do a check-in with me. And that whole thing of going quiet and going silent about, you know, what I'm needing or what's going on with me, my husband was very aware of that, and he would actually initiate that conversation.
Oh, good.
And he would, yeah. Again, though, through trial and error,
right?
through trial and error, he would actually take that initiative and sit with me. And he said, okay, so we talked about church, we've talked about work, and we've already talked about the kids. It's your turn. How are you doing? How are you doing at all? how are we doing? And is there anything that you and I have not discussed that you've put aside because you thought now wasn't the time?
Mm.
That was helpful. What also ended up being helpful with those particular conversations was I specifically asked him for a heads up, because him springing it on me on a Friday night was not helpful, because I did put it on the back burner, because I did put it aside. And I did specifically say, okay, if we're going to have that conversation, I need a little bit of a heads up. Mm-hmm. So I can prepare so that when we do have that time together, I'm not all over the place, right? I'm not telling you something that happened 8.5 months ago. I am telling you something that happened recently, that how I've been processing and working on it, so that it stays relevant to the conversation, but also so that it doesn't feel so overwhelming for both him and myself. Again, through trial and error. This mm-hmm. isn't to say that I didn't bring up something that happened 8.5 months ago. I'm sure I did. but through trial and error, I realized that that just wasn't helpful, right? That constantly putting it on the back burner and not dealing with it, that wasn't helpful to him, but it certainly wasn't helpful to my own heart, mm-hmm. right? The other thing that I did do a lot of so that I could prepare for those conversations with my husband was I did a lot of journaling. Mm-hmm. That doesn't work for everyone, but specifically for me, it helped me pick apart the situation and get to the heart of the issue, so that when I did have time with him, I wasn't picking it apart, right? Because his time was so limited, right? And because I did want his complete and undivided attention, I didn't want to spend an hour and a half picking it apart.
Right.
So when I came to him, I had it already there. It was pretty fresh. And I could dive right on in. Mm-hmm. So that was helpful for us.
Mm-hmm. My husband has never been bivocational, but I would imagine, sometimes I think about it and I think that's a lot, but I also think there's some advantages to being bivocational. One being you are in your community. You have no ability to stay in a bubble or separate, right? So you're engaging with people on a daily basis that you get a picture of the world and what people are dealing with, right? I'd love for
Absolutely.
You to speak to that. Like, what were the advantages for you guys of being bivocational and you working outside the home?
So I have to tell you that when we did launch our church plant, we weren't living in our community. So when we finally did actually live in our community, so then now we were living and working there, it was a tremendous difference because there was a rhythm to it. Like I said, we lived in a predominantly immigrant area. And so you got to know their rhythm and why people were out at all hours of the night entirely. You got to know their lifestyle, some of their struggles. I did not have my own washer and dryer in our apartment in Union City. So I got to go to the laundromat, which I actually thoroughly enjoyed. I know it's not everybody's not on the top of everybody's, you know, fun to-do list. But for me, I loved it because it did provide an opportunity for me just to watch and observe how people did life. I got to watch them bring their children, how their children played a role at the, you know, a role at the laundromat. Washing, drying, folding, how they interacted with their children. So that was a huge benefit. Working in the community specifically, that was great because for me, it was a unique opportunity to see how the language barrier was a huge barrier. Mm. I got a taste of that with our son's elementary school. I remember him coming home one day and saying, "I really need to learn Spanish." And while my husband is Dominican and I am Puerto Rican, my parents did not teach me Spanish. I actually learned Spanish when I got married to my husband and we attended an all Spanish speaking church. So and while we spoke a limited amount of Spanish here at home, it certainly wasn't a full on conversation. And for our son to go to his elementary school, he said, "The lunch ladies speak to me in Spanish and I have no idea what they're asking me." It was great. I mean, it wasn't great for him. But it was another wonderful way for us to connect to our community, but also to get our son to do it. Specifically with my husband working and him doing the ESL program, you got to know families and the dynamics and why they worked 12 to 18 hour days. And most of the time it was because they were supporting multiple families, not just the one in the States, but the one back home. So that was great. It was hard because we couldn't always relate. I mean, I know I couldn't specifically, but I know that my husband could to a degree because he was born in the Dominican Republic and came here when he was 13 and lived for a substantial amount of time in the Dominican Republic without his mom being there. So he could definitely relate, but our lives were different now, right? So it was interesting to watch how these people maintain their commitments to their family. Definitely an eye-opener as to how to lead our church as well and how and what kind of events would actually benefit them.
That's so great. I mean, in what you're describing, I would imagine if I were you, I'd feel almost bad. Like, I feel like this is a lot, but then I'm watching these people in my neighborhood and they are working so hard.
That's right. I'm complaining about my 7-hour workday that actually has a start and end time. But I am talking to a woman at the laundromat who is using her time, her lunch hour, technically, to do the laundry. And she's going to let her daughter finish it so she can go back and finish her shift. So yeah, definitely a perspective changer.
Yes. I don't want to move past the bivocational conversation too quickly, but I also don't know exactly what to ask. And so I'm wondering, you know, the reason why I don't want to move it past it too quickly is because I feel like it's just an underrepresented.
It is. Oh, it absolutely is. It is definitely an underrepresented area. When we started, there were very few people that we could actually talk to about it. I would say now, afterwards, there are more people. But in the beginning, I think that anytime I try to engage in a conversation, it was almost like we were just from another planet because it's like, wait, what are you doing? So it was hard finding anyone really to kind of relate to us. So yeah.
My question is very open-ended, but what else do we need to know? What else do bivocational pastors' wives listening, what else do you want to say to them?
I would definitely want to say, first and foremost, be prepared for change and on so many levels, right? I think that I initially went into church planting thinking that it was just going to be like the way our lives were before in the sense of fast-paced moving and busyness, but it was far more than that, right? We were introduced to a brand new culture, a brand new city, and a different rhythm, and it definitely changed how we did life. So I would say, be prepared for change. I would also say, you know, be prepared to be wowed by God, but by your community, and also just by your family in and of itself. My son specifically, because he is 15 now, But when we got into church planting, he was 7 going on 8. And he's a completely different person. And I attribute that to our adventure of church planting. He experienced city life, something that he wouldn't do here in the suburbs. And that was an entirely wonderful experience. I mean, I think he loves it. He talks about it all the time and he loved it. But I didn't expect that. I didn't expect it to be such a holistic experience for us all. And it really was. And I guess I would also just say, you know, be prepared for it to be hard work. But it's generally hard work. Yeah. It's generally hard work, but it is definitely hard work, and it has its rewards, but it is multi-layered and involved. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for speaking for these women, and I hope it's an encouragement to them. I also want to speak to another underrepresented group, is those people who've decided to close their church plant. Can you tell us, let's go back into the story and kind of fill us in what happened after you started the church and how you got to the end.
Yeah, no one ever launches their church with the end mind of closing their church plant, right? That's not the story. That's not the story you plan in your head. And that's certainly not what's casted on a vision board, right? it's not. And I say that because it wasn't how we walked into it. And I think that you walk in with your own agenda and your own plans, and you just never know what big picture God has in mind, right? Mm-hmm. There's so much more to it. So we started off our church plant quite successfully, I would say. We did get that space at that facility, and we had a wonderful turnout initially. I want to say that it was harder to get our ESL students to come and kind of acclimate themselves into our Sunday services. That was definitely hard because, like I said, they're working 6 to 7 day weeks, 12 to 18 hour shifts, taking care of multiple families. So that was certainly an adjustment for us. And we, I think, initially often played around with the idea of like, do we switch our time for services? And we played around with that. And we also thought about, well, perhaps house church is a more efficient route to go. And we did that for a little while as well. Ultimately, I think that we had better success at just being a part of the community than actually hosting our Sunday services. We had far more engagement at our parent workshops. We had a privilege of doing that for quite a number of years at a local public school, and that was fantastic. Wow. We had a phenomenal opportunity to work with the Family Success Center there. We did that for a couple of years too. That was far more engaging and connected us to the community than our weekly Sunday services. And I think that was hard because, again, that's not what's casted onto the vision board, right? What's casted onto the vision board is we're going to reach this community and we're going to have services XYZ days, and this is what's going to work. We did that for quite a few number of years, and it became challenging. And I think it became challenging because what was on the vision board wasn't necessarily matching what was happening in real life. And despite making changes here and there, attendance on Sundays still remained pretty much stagnant for quite some time. And in addition to that, our church was our church was never really going to be self-sustainable, not in the area in which we live. That was not going to happen. So you try to get creative and you start networking with different partners, and that works for a little while, but is the church growing necessarily, right? That ultimately becomes the question, is the church growing? And I think we rounded into year 5, and we just had that hard conversation of, this really isn't moving forward. Yes, we've experienced success in these areas, but we're not necessarily moving forward. And so entering year 6, I think when January rolled around in 2019, we knew the inevitable was coming. We had already switched our locations, I think, 3 times. We had rented a huge space at first, and that was fantastic because it gave us an opportunity to serve our community, and we were able to host different events there, including, like, we were even able to have an Alzheimer's support group that used our space there too. That was great. But ultimately, rent gets more and more expensive as the years come along, right?
Yeah.
And partners also come and go.
Yeah.
And that's hard. That's hard, right? So year 6 rolled around, and I think we just started having that hard conversation of where to next, right? the relationships were there, but the growth of the church wasn't necessarily. And that's a hard conversation to have, especially when everyone is doing the hard work of trying to connect and develop these relationships. They're just not happening.
When you say conversations, do you mean between you and your husband, or do you mean with supporting churches?
I would say with me and my husband, but also supporting churches and anyone else who was partnering with us in the area and the leaders that we had at our church. It was just, it's a hard conversation.
Okay, got it.
And we entered year six. And I think when we were halfway through the year in June, we had the hard conversation with our church and we said, look, this is where we stand. Financially, this is also where we stand. And we're not sure what's next. But at this time, it looks like in the next couple of months, we really may need to consider closing our plant. That was hard. I don't think there's any other way to say that, except that that was hard. And despite that we were having that conversation for probably about 6 months, you would think that your heart was ready to receive that, that your heart was prepared for that, but it was terribly disappointing. And I just remember it was June when we had that conversation, and I was just terribly disappointed. And a couple of months later, in October 2019, we decided that it was time to close our plant. Hmm. Yeah.
How have you processed that in terms of God's character and faithfulness?
Like I said, I think because we were having that conversation already for some time, I think I deceived myself somewhere along there, and I thought that we would close our plant and I would be okay, or that we would be okay. I don't know why I thought that, but perhaps it was because it was a healthy conversation and because we felt the peace of God throughout it. It still was hard, but that Sunday that we closed, there was peace, and I'm so grateful for that. But I have to tell you, the year after that was interesting. It was harder than I expected. And yet I saw God's faithfulness every single month. but it was hard processing the disappointment. Mm-hmm. And like I said, no one casts that on the vision board. It's not the ending you expect.
Right.
Especially, I think, when you're closing and you think back about all the great opportunities that you had with this community. But in addition, all of the wonderful relationships you've also developed now too, you can't help but say why. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think that initially we tried to be very busy with ourselves and we immediately went on and joined another church and attempted to serve there. But then COVID came and that changed things entirely. Mm-hmm. But I think I just saw the faithfulness of God in the relationships that we developed. It was great to have people come alongside us and just remind us of the goodness of God. Mm-hmm. It was also really great to just reminisce on how we saw God's faithfulness personally in our family. Our daughter has special needs. And so throughout this time too, we were transitioning that. And I'm so grateful for the time that we had there. It was hard, but I am so grateful. There were so many opportunities that our daughter got because we were specifically in that city for that time. And that's where I saw like just the character of God, his love, his provision, right? I talk about the provision of the church and I talk about how he was so faithful there, but to my family, to our daughter specifically, and to our son who had an incredible elementary school that he has wonderful memories to, I saw God's provision there. You ask my son, he has the best memories. He loved it. He actually was very disappointed when we had to move back to our house.
So you think the primary feeling, emotion you had after closing was disappointment?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But not with God, really. It's more just with yourself. You think that there is something you missed. You think that there was something you missed. If my husband were here, he would say, there was something we did wrong. And you would probably ask for a volunteer to walk you back and say, you know, come along with me. Where did we go wrong? And I would say it took a full year for me to kind of reach a place where I said, okay, this isn't about me anymore. This is so much more about you, God, right? And I'm taking a very narrow lens here and I'm focusing on what I think we did wrong or what we could have done better versus all that you did and are continuing to do. That's definitely how I approach life. I definitely approach life with this very narrow view, but church planting helped me take on that larger lens and just remember that God is such a big picture God, right? I think that I entered church planting thinking it was solely just about that one community and how we would come alongside them, but it was also how they came alongside us and how we learned so much about ourselves, but also about our God.
Yeah. So it's great. How would you determine or define success? Now, based upon your experience, what is success for pastors' wives, pastors, church planters, anyone in vocational ministry?
You know, my husband and I actually talked about that for several months after we closed our plant, actually. because I think that was a big question for him. How do you determine success? The nice part about that, though, is that we determined earlier on in our church plant that numbers would not define our success, that numbers weren't what we were after. It was real growth, right? And I think that people think of growth and they think of numbers, but it wasn't just numbers, right? It's relationships. And it's also how effective are you being in your community? And for us afterwards, that was how we defined success. Like, did we do what we set out to do, which was make connections in the community, let the community know that there was a church there with a body of people who loved them and who wanted to come alongside them and do life? That was a success. We still keep in touch with all of those organizations and the people and the partners that we were able to come alongside. That is success. Mm-hmm. Isn't the success that was casted on that vision board? But definitely success in terms of what we initially set out to do was just to spread the love of God, mm-hmm. make connections with the people that we lived with and did life with. Mm-hmm. That's how we did that. It wasn't easy though. Like I said, it was several months long conversation, but
I'm sure y'all are still processing it.
Absolutely.
You were faithful. That's success in God's eyes, is faithfulness to Him, trusting Him, obeying Him. You did all those things.
Yes.
That's faithfulness. I appreciate your time today. I appreciate your insight. I really am praying. We prayed beforehand this would be an encouragement to women listening. I know that they have been encouraged by you and your story. So thank you for being willing to share it with us.
Absolute honor for me, actually.
Friends, thanks so much for listening to By Faith. If you are enjoying this season, would you consider sharing this podcast with a pastor's wife in your life? I want to be an encouragement and help to women like you and me who are serving Christ all over the globe. And as always, you can find resources and links in the show notes for the episode on your podcast platform or on my website, christinehoover.net. I've also recently created a website where I've collected all of my writing, podcast episodes, and books for women in ministry. You can find that at howtothriveasapastorswife.com. That's the name of my new book. And you can find tons of resources there, including the books and articles that have been most meaningful to me in my own ministry. Join me next week as I talk with Jen Oshman. Jen is a pastor's wife in Parker, Colorado, and she joins me to talk about friendship for the pastor's wife, a topic we all are interested in, I know. I look forward to sharing this insightful conversation with you. And until then, have a great week and keep walking forward by faith.